I'm going to start by talking about signs. You all know what signs are. You go on the highway, you're going down I-35. There's a sign. It says Palmer Lane, exit half mile. And so you exit and there's Palmer Lane. But the sign is not Palmer Lane. The sign points you to Palmer Lane. And then there's a sign, it says Austin, 10 miles. Well, the sign isn't Austin. It just says, it's giving you direction. It's saying Austin's over there. Or you go to H-E-B and there's a sign on the building, H-E-B. And the sign is not the grocery store. If you want to go to the grocery store, you have to go inside the building. But the sign tells you it's this building. That's what signs do. And so they point you to something else other than what the sign is itself. John, the author of the gospel, uses this word a lot for Jesus's miracles, signs. He calls them signs a lot. And many of Jesus's works are signs that point you to something, because that's what signs do. They point you to something. Today we're going to be in the beginning of Jesus's ministry. And in the very beginning of Jesus's ministry, we're going to get his first sign that John is going to talk about. And so I'm going to read. This is John 2, verses 1 through 12. It says, "On the third day, there was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus also was invited to the wedding with his disciples. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, 'They have no wine.' And Jesus said to her, 'Woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come.' His mother said to the servants, 'Do whatever he tells you.' Now there were six stone water jars there for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, 'Fill the jars with water.' And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, 'Now, draw some out and take it to the master of the feast.' So they took it. When the master of the feast tasted the water, now become wine, and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom and said to him, 'Everyone serves the good wine first, and when people have drunk freely, then the poor wine. But you have kept the good wine until now.' This, the first of his signs, Jesus did at Cana in Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and his brothers and his disciples, and they stayed there for a few days." Okay. So I told you that earlier when you were wanting to do the let's share what we learned. Let's save that for the teaching. So I want to know what observations you had in this text. So you had some opportunity during the week to be looking at it. So share with me, what did you see in this text? Just throw things at me.
Mary knew that Jesus would do it.
Okay, Mary knew he would do it.
It was his mama, and mama would please her son. So
Yeah.
I guess that
Okay, someone else.
I didn't read this last week, but so this is a common thing to happen, a wedding, you know, and it was just a normal life, you know, activities and
yeah.
things going on. So during this occasion is when all this is taking place. So it's ordinary. So
it's pretty ordinary.
Something gonna happen.
Everybody goes to weddings.
Yeah.
Right?
So. Yeah.
That's right. She's very familiar with that right now. Okay, what else?
And in verse,
something you saw. Go ahead.
In verse, it's here.
Uh huh.
Verse 5. Mary said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you to do."
Yeah.
It's like a. So it's not just said to the servants, it's like said to me. Do what Jesus told you to
yes.
do here.
Yes.
Believe him. What he said, it might seem you cannot understand, but do it. Just
yes.
do it.
Yeah. Okay. What else? Somebody else? Something you saw?
Jesus gives abundantly.
He gives abundantly.
He gave better wine than they had before. He just.
Okay. Okay, yep. What else?
I love the detail in verse 9 where it says, when the master of the feast tasted the water, now become wine, and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew,
right.
the master of the feast called that, that. And so, like, all of the guests are kind of people of importance, don't actually know that it was Jesus. Like, Jesus doesn't call
yes.
attention to himself.
Right? That's right. Yeah, we're going to talk
servants,
about that, actually.
The servants are the ones who knew that.
Yep.
They were the first ones to see that Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah, it was revealing.
Okay, good.
This way.
Yeah. Someone else, what do you see?
He has the same thing as Vinny, except a different way, because the servants did what Jesus said to do. They just did it.
They did it.
Go get the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Put it up and then, okay.
Okay.
So yeah, that's an example of how I should be when I get directions from God.
Yes.
Do it.
You know,
if he says to do something.
And actually, God doesn't need us to do it. He can give you wine out of nothing.
Yeah,
he could.
Yeah, but God uses us to do something. Just like it. Fill the jar with water.
Yes.
Okay, just do it. And then take out some. And God didn't tell you, so, oh, take out some wine. But, you know, oh, yeah, I feel it well with water. He just said, take out some.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But like Jesus, he can just give you wine out of nothing.
He could, but he didn't.
He didn't. He used us. He used the servant. He used.
Okay. Good. Anyone else?
Well, Jesus didn't want to let the cat out of the bag. I don't want to manifest my glory, so...
Right.
He didn't want to display his deity, his great power, quite yet. He wasn't quite ready to do it.
That's right. That's what he said. My hour is not yet come.
Yeah, but to serve his mom, he was willing to do that.
Okay, yeah. We're going to talk about that, too. And so, a lot of things you guys said, we're going to talk about now. Okay, this is Jesus' first public sign. That's what John says at the end of the story. It happened a few days after Jesus had called Philip and Nathanael, which is at the end of chapter 1. If you look at verse 1, it says on the third day, and that likely means 3 days later, which, by the way we count days, it's 2 days later, because they count days. That day is day 1. Like, Jesus was raised from the dead on the third day. Friday was day 1, not day 0. In America, we count that as day 0, but that's not how they counted days. And so, this is a couple days after he called Philip and Nathanael, which was a day after he called Andrew and the other disciple. And of course, that day, Andrew went and got Peter. And so, there's at least 5 disciples already mentioned here. So at least 5 of them are probably at this wedding. He took them up with him back into Galilee. He goes to a wedding. He's celebrating a marriage. Marriage is a good thing, Jesus. Jesus considers marriage a good thing. It's a picture of Christ in the church. That's what Paul tells us, what marriage is. And anything that is a picture of Christ in the church is a good thing. In the first century Jewish culture, the culture Jesus lived in, a wedding could last a week, a celebration. It wasn't like what we think of. I bet your wedding didn't last a week. No, you wouldn't want to do that.
One day it was more than enough.
That's right. And so we don't know how long it had been going on here. It doesn't say. It's not really important to the story. But they're running out of wine. And that can be very embarrassing for the family, particularly the bridegroom, whoever's footing the bill for this party. If they run out of wine, that's an embarrassment. And Jesus' mom comes to him because it's an embarrassment. This is a family thing. This is either a friend of the families or a relative of the families. We don't know which, but either way, mom's concerned about this. Jesus's mom is. And she says, they have no wine. Now, when she says they have no wine, really, that's not what she means. What she means is, do something. That's what she means, but that's not what she says. This is, you know, people communicate this way all the time, right? This is so real. It's just so, the detail is so real here. And he understands what she means. So she doesn't say what she means, but he knows what she means. And he comes back with, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. And that's kind of a strange response. Mm-hmm. You know, they have no wine. Well, my hour has not come. That's kind of odd way of responding. But somehow in that response, maybe there was more there that just didn't get recorded, we don't know. But somehow in that response, mom senses he's going to do something. And she immediately says to the servants, do what he says. She knows. He's going to do something. She doesn't know what he's going to do, but she knows he's going to take care of this. And so the servants do it. And they fill 6 stone jars with water, and Jesus turns the water into wine, and it's the best wine that these people have ever had. You can't get better wine than this. And then John ends the story with this. This was the first sign Jesus did, and it showed his glory. That's verse 11. That's the story. Just sort of walked you through the story. So in the story, Jesus shows his glory. That's what it says. This story shows the glory of Jesus. We need to kind of see that. Because you read the story and you say, where's the glory? It's kind of a mundane. You guys brought this up, right? It's very common. And it's hidden. And so Jesus shows his glory, but it's kind of a hidden glory. God does this all the time. God reveals glory in the background very often. Most people at this party have no idea where the wine came from. In fact, the head guy running the whole thing, he doesn't know where the wine came from. And he's the guy running the show. And he doesn't know where it came from. The public doesn't know, but the servants do. And we know the disciples do, because at the end it tells us they believed. And so they're believing something. They probably knew. Somehow they were in on it or saw it or whatever, but they know. And so here's Jesus. He's showing his power and he's showing his glory in the background. He does this a lot. It's kind of like being born in a stable with all the animals in a country town instead of being born in a palace in Jerusalem. I mean, he deserved a palace in Jerusalem, right? But that's not what happened. He was born in a stable with the cows and the sheep and the whatever was there. And when he's born, it's the angels appearing, glory, oh, that's the word, to God in the highest. But who are they talking to? Shepherds out in the field. Not government rulers. You would think, this is the Messiah. This is the king. This is the guy who, when he's going to show his glory, he's going to show it, man, to all of the high up people. And he doesn't. He shows it to shepherds. Here he shows it to servants. This is God's way. It's not the way we think. We don't think that way. Jesus says he reveals himself to little children, not to the rich and powerful. That's normal for Jesus. Those with political power very often miss Jesus. Those with lots of money very often miss Jesus. Those with much earthly fame very often miss Jesus. It's, the Donald Trumps of this world, the Taylor Swifts of this world, the LeBron Jameses, the Xi Jinpings, the CEOs, the presidents, the people who have all this earthly success, the actresses and actors in Hollywood, the stars, these people very often just ignore Jesus. They don't care about Jesus. And they do that because they're often distracted by money or power or fame or earthly success or whatever. They're distracted by those things. And when you focus on those things, you miss Jesus because you're not even looking for him. You don't care. You're looking for other things. And you just don't see him. Now, the thing of it is, it's not that like the rich and the powerful people of this world can't know Jesus. They actually can know him. It's that in order for them to know Jesus, they must change and become like little children. That's what Jesus said in Matthew 18. Unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Okay, that's what Jesus is looking for. He's looking for the heart of a child. But the more earthly focused you are, the harder it is to do that. And so Jesus, he does miracles and he has power that all of these earthly powerful people can't even touch. They can't even come close to what Jesus has. But he's not flashy. He's not showing it off. He's doing it in the background, hidden. And the people who see it are the servants, the humble of this world. Unless you're humble, you will miss Jesus. That's just something that is required to see Jesus, is a certain amount of humility. And then Jesus needs to be your priority. God has to be central in your life. At this wedding, we have Jesus. Jesus is at this wedding. His mom is at this wedding. His brothers are very likely at this wedding, because in verse 12 it says that he and his mom and his disciples and his brothers then went down to Capernaum. So his brothers are probably here too. So we've got Jesus, his mom, his brothers, his disciples. They're all at this wedding. This is a family event. This wedding is. And his mom comes to him with a request to take care of a family friend or a relative. That's the request. And so she is bringing a family request to Jesus. And Jesus says, what does this have to do with me? My hour is not yet come. That's his response. In other words, mom is focused on taking care of the family. But Jesus' response indicates that he's focused on something else. Something else is going on here that's bigger than we ran out of wine. We ran out of wine is true, but there's something else here. See, Jesus' response is indicating that he's really thinking about his mission from the Father. His time is not yet here. It's not that it's not time for him to die yet. That comes later. It's not time for him to reveal himself yet. He has not yet done that. And that's what he's saying to his mom. My time is not yet here. And he's thinking of his mission. He's thinking of the Father and what the Father wants him to do, not of the family. It's not that the mom's wrong to ask. She's not wrong. Her request is perfectly legitimate. But Jesus is looking at something bigger than that. That's going on. There's something more than just we're running out of wine here. And so, to Jesus, family, as good as family is not central. There's something else bigger than family here. Jesus is considering his mission to be that thing. God is central. He says, it's not my time. And then he turns around and does her request, even though it's not his time. See, God is more important than family, and yet he takes care of his family. And we need to see that, and we need to see both sides of that. Sometimes people get so focused on family that family turns into an idol, and you wind up missing God because of family. And that should not be. But then, sometimes people get so focused on God that they aren't, I would say they're not really focused on God if they're neglecting their family, but they use that as an excuse to neglect their family. But we need to see that in our life, Jesus has to be first. He has to be first, even above family. But here's the thing of it. When we make Jesus first, we care about our family, because he does. If you're going to follow him, he rebuked the Pharisees for not honoring their father and mother because of, you know, you say the gift is korban, and so, I'm breaking the tradition of man, you're breaking the law of God. He rebuked them for that. And so Jesus cares about that. He'll direct you to take care of your family if you will follow him first. And here's the thing of it. When Jesus is first, you actually love your family more than you do if you make your family first. You actually do. I've seen this 1,000 times over. Put Jesus first. He'll have you take care of your family in the proper way. But there may be times where you need to not do something with the family because Jesus is calling you to do something. That may happen, and you need to do that if that's the case. Your family needs to see that. They need to see that you love them. They also need to see that he's first. They need to see both those things. And when you put Jesus first, he cares about you. I mean, he cared about his mom here, didn't he? For her, he turned water into wine. For you, he'll do the same thing. He will take the... he's done that with everyone who knows Jesus. Because if you know Jesus, he has taken an old life and turned it into something new. That's what Jesus does. He's in that business. He'll take the old water of your life and make it new wine. But in order for that to happen, you have to do what he says. That's what happens in the story. Mom says to the servants, do what he says. And they did. He said, fill the stone jars. They filled the stone jars. He said, draw it, give it to the master of the feast. They did it. She, his mom, believed. That's faith. But she's exhibiting faith when she says that. And so he took their water and turned it into wine. And when you trust Jesus, when you believe in him, when you do what he says, because those things are related, he will change your life. The old becomes new. That's what Jesus does. And this whole story is really, it's a picture of old to new in multiple ways. I've been talking about it for conversion, which is true, but it's also a real picture of old covenant, new covenant that we've got going on here. A covenant, for those of you who aren't English, your English is not your first language. Covenant is a Bible word. It's basically a holy agreement between God and man. God and man make an agreement. The Bible calls that a covenant. Marriage is a covenant. It's an agreement, a holy agreement between two people. And so in the Bible, there's an old covenant in the Old Testament. There's a new covenant in the New Testament. In other words, we have different agreements between God and man. I don't know how to explain it. It's like you know how in a country laws change over the centuries, something like that. And so, you know, we today in the 21st century don't live under 19th century American tax law. And so we don't have to necessarily follow all the laws that were in place in the 1800s. Because that's not what we live under. Something like that with Old Covenant, New Covenant. But in the Old Covenant, Old Testament, there is, the Jews had to keep all these laws. And among those laws was washings for purification. That was a central part of the law that they had to do. They had to wash before they ate. They had to wash their feet when they entered into the house. They had to wash if they went into the temple. They had to wash to if they touched anything unclean, you know, like this bowl got unclean because whatever reason, you know, I cut my finger and blood got on it. And so I touched the bowl. I now have to wash just to be clean from touching the bowl. They had to wash if they touched any kind of fluids that came out of a body. They had, I mean, it goes on. They had to wash for everything, to be pure. That's the picture. And all this washing was a picture of being clean. You made yourself clean on the outside to remind yourself that you're supposed to be clean on the inside. That's what this washing and purification and all of this is all about. And that's what those six stone jars are for. It actually tells us that. They were six stone jars that were there for the Jewish purification rites. That's their purpose. The purpose of these stone jars is to be filled with water so that you could keep the law and wash yourself whenever you needed to wash yourself. But Jesus transforms what is inside those jars into something else. He transforms it into wine. Now, when we take communion, wine is this cup is the blood of the new covenant, which is given for the remission of sins. All of you drink of it. It's the wine is the picture of the new covenant. The wine is the new covenant in many ways, at least what it's talking about, the cross. And so Jesus is taking an entire old way of thinking and turning it into something new. Now, at the wedding, no one's thinking that. No one's thinking, oh, wow, man, he's introducing a new covenant here. They're just drinking wine and enjoying it. That's all they're doing. But God, in the background, is doing something else with that event, even if on the surface nobody realizes what's going on. God is showing us something else that is going on, because God does that all the time. And so that's his way of doing things. And so there's this covenant that's become new. And in the new covenant, well, that's how you and I become new. We become new through the cross and the resurrection of Christ and our faith in that. And so Jesus takes the old and he makes it new. He takes the old you and he makes it a new you. You're still you, but you're a different you. That is just as much a miracle as turning water into wine. Praise the Lord that he does that. If he doesn't do that, I'm in big trouble. And so are you. But he does this miracle all the time, guys. I mean, just start thinking of where you've seen this miracle. Okay, Saul murdered Christians, right? And then he met Jesus. And his name got changed into Paul. And Saul, now Paul, went around taking the message of Jesus all around the Mediterranean world. That's what happened. Or how about Matthew? Matthew was a tax collector. And so, I don't know if you know what that means in their culture, but he betrayed his people and he cheated them out of money. And then he met Jesus. And Jesus changed him, and he stopped being a tax collector. And he ended up writing the book of Matthew that we read today in the New Testament. Or John Newton was a slave trader in the 1700s. And then he met Jesus. Jesus changed him. He stopped being a slave trader. He followed Jesus. He wrote the song Amazing Grace. We sing it. It's probably the most famous hymn. It was written by a slave trader who got changed by Jesus. His water got turned into wine. John Newton's water became wine. I know men, I could give you their names, I'm not going to give you their names, who came here to Austin. They were communists. They did not believe God. They had no hope. They met Jesus. He turned their dirty water into wine. And they rejoice in him today. I know men who were Muslims. And they tried to be right with God on their own merits. They ate all the right foods. They fasted at Ramadan. They went to the mosque. They washed their hands and feet. That's a big thing in Islam as well, washing, purification. It's a very Jewish religion. Very Old Testament, Old Covenant religion. I know you laugh because there's such hostility between Islam and Judaism, but they're so much alike. But no matter what these men did, it wasn't enough. And they knew it. They sensed it. They were never clean. They couldn't be clean until they met Jesus. And then he gave them his righteousness, and he gave them his cleanness. And he gave them his peace, and he changed them. I could go on. Jesus made me new. There's an old Mike and a new Mike, you know. He made Benny new. He made, you know, many of y'all, he made you new. And that's what he does. He makes people new. But you have to trust him. You have to trust him. And trust means you do what he says. That's part of what trust means. Jesus is in the business of taking the old and making it new. That's what he does. But when he does that, he will often do it quietly, behind the scenes, in the background. And when he changes you, it may not be flashy, but it'll be real. And that's what you want. Forget flashy, guys. Go for what's real. When Jesus changed me, and I'm not going to go through my whole story, but I will say this. In my conversion story, when he changed me, I didn't even know he was changing me. It was going on, and I wasn't even aware it was going on until after the fact. And after the fact, it's like, oh, I think I'm a Christian. There was this awareness in me that I think I became a Christian, and I didn't really even know I had become a Christian. Was kind of how my, it's part of my conversion story. But the old me has become a new me. And that's true. And there's a difference between the old me and the new. I don't mean the new me is perfect by any stretch of the imagination. The new me still sins. And the new you still sins too. We need to be straight about that. But that work, old to new, that work is in Jesus. And that work is a sign. John said, that this was the first sign that he gave. And a sign points to something else. It points to Jesus. When he changes you, it's pointing back to him. And it's pointing to his glory. But it's sort of a hushed glory. It's not a loud glory necessarily. But it's glory. For sure, it's glory. Praise the Lord. I would like to close with prayer. But for prayer, what I want to do is this. I want to open it up and let you guys just have a time to pray. I want you to pray along these lines. I want you to glorify Jesus for the work he did in your life. However you want to do that. I'm going to ask you to keep the prayers short. We're not looking for 10-minute prayer, just one sentence, you know, something like that. You can pray more than once if you want. But I want us to just have a time to pray and glorify Jesus for what he's done in our lives.